It's time to lead off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mac on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Toronto Raptors, as Fred VanVleet throws it high in the air, have won 15 straight. The Toronto Raptors improved to 40-14, 21-7 at home.
But for us, it's just about every single day coming in and taking every game like one at a time and making sure that we go out and execute every single game, have a game plan, and you know, just go with it. Whatever happens, happens.
So the Toronto Raptors Never Gonna Lose Again tour continues tomorrow night in Brooklyn, New York. 15 in a row.
Canadian record.
Well, yes. Yes, they finally, the long-discussed Calgary Stampeders record of 14 consecutive wins by a Canadian-based franchise.
You don't seem impressed, but you don't seem impressed by that one.
Well, I am impressed. I mean,
who sent a congrats tweet, by the way?
Did they really?
Stampeders, yeah. Congrats on beating our record, yeah. That was a dolphin more than a horse.
What's more than a dolphin than a horse? Oh, God. Well, 15 straight wins. I mean, you're at a point here where you don't really know what to say other than on to the next one. This team, it feels, and you know this, guys, having played sports at a high level, it feels like you're never going to lose again.
It's like it's easy, but it's, you still have to work for it, right? You watch the games and you just expect them to make everything. I think last night though was one of their best shooting percentages on the year, but.
And they were heavy on the starters last night.
Well, they have to, yeah. You
win in different ways.
Well, that's been the case all year. They're finding different ways, and the bench has exceeded. Obviously, we've talked about that in depth and how important that is for this team. But it's one of those things where it's not even a question on whether they're going to lose or not. It got close last night, but when you're shooting like that, you're not going to lose many.
The first half of this game was terrible. It was
a defensive stalwart performance by both teams.
It was terrible, terrible first half. Both coaches are like, okay, congrats on the effective shooting, but what the hell is happening on the defensive end here? And then the Raptors continue to do what they do. They go into the locker room, they make their adjustments, and more importantly, they implement it. I think it's fair to say at this point, Pascal Siakam is way better than Karl Anthony Towns. And I don't know if this is something that we thought that we would get to. Karl Anthony Towns is a first overall draft pick in 2015. This man was named to a national team, the Dominican national team, at the age of 16, when Pascal Siakam pretty much started playing basketball. And he, in my opinion, has surpassed him. Watching Karl Anthony Towns play last night, watching him not be able to just dummy the likes of Fred VanVleet in the post. Yeah, no wonder this team went on a losing streak that pretty much matched the winning streak that the Raptors are on right now.
Well, the thing with Siakam, and Masai and Bobby would know this because, I mean, they've known the player since day one. So the character stuff, it's in the bag. They know it. But I love when a guy signs his max extension, what, a year or so out. So all the money is guaranteed. It's coming to him. I mean, there's no negotiation here. He could have an accident tomorrow and he's getting $130, $140 million. Knock and I'm knocking wood. On glass. Well, the table's made of glass. So, okay, now knock on wood underneath underneath the table. But the money's guaranteed. He hasn't missed a beat. And in fact, not only has he not missed a beat, he's taken 2, 3, 4 steps forward. This guy is just coming into his own. This contract, if he continues to progress at the rate he has progressed over the last couple of years, and especially this year with the leaps and bounds he's taken in the post-Kawhi universe, this contract is going to be full value and more.
The money hasn't changed him.
More money, less problems is what you're saying, Mike? Something along those lines.
Sometimes when you sign a big contract.
The notorious ZIG.
Yeah, for
the
real.
Notorious ZIG. More money, more problems.
Say what you're trying to say, Ziggy.
So sometimes when you sign a big contract, the game sometimes can go sideways.
Do you have anyone in mind?
Or go non-existent.
Do you have anyone in mind?
It's happened.
Yeah, he's been fantastic. It's funny to think that earlier in the season, and I was thinking about this last night while watching the game, we're like, oh my gosh, he can't rein in his excitement. He's fouling everybody. He can't stay in games. This is going to be the year where his development kind of takes a step back because it's taken 6 steps forward. So the step back has to come at some point. And I do think that sometimes in the game last night, he was forcing it a little bit and maybe he was making the ill-advised plays, but the motor on this kid is so much so that even if he makes a bad play, you know he's going to get his hand on the rebound. You know he's going to have an opportunity to tap it out to his teammates so they can swing it around and get a good shot off. It's been a thing of beauty.
But look at what the hell is happening at the top of this conference.
I didn't want to. It's stressful.
The Raptors have won 15 games in a row, but the Celts have won 7 straight and 9 of their last 10. And the Bucks, I mean, they're 46-7, so this is an obvious comment to make, but it feels like every time you look under the last 10 column,
they're
8-2, 9-1,
yeah.
10-0 themselves. So the Raptors, this 15-game win streak, we're waving the pom-poms, and rightfully so. This has been absolutely necessary because they are in a fight. They're in a fight for playoff seeding here, and 2 means so much more than 3 when you look at the way the standings break down.
And I'm sure if you look at it, if they go 500 in this last 15-game stretch or 14-game stretch, whatever, that they're probably out of a home court in the first round. That's how good the top is.
Well, or they're 4-5, and as yeah. Ashley has said, look, Miami's that team you want to avoid, preferably in the first round, and there sit the Heat in the 4 spot. Like that 4-5, I think you want to steer clear of, quite obviously.
I'm saying if they don't go on this winning streak, they don't go on this winning streak,
they could be
and they just sit 5. Yeah, they could be, yeah.
Oh, so, for sure. Yeah. I mean, and the best part about the whole thing is that they're still 6.5 games back from Milwaukee.
Yes.
Yeah. They've won 15 in a row and they're still nearly 10 games back from Milwaukee. But to your point, listen, if I'm looking at this breakdown and watching how the standings develop, I am getting less and less and less and less concerned about the 76ers every single day. Yesterday, Joel Embiid, you want to talk about character guys? Yesterday, Joel Embiid goes on Instagram like he does, makes some kind of cryptic caption like he does. Jimmy Butler, his ex-teammate, in the comments, you know where they welcome villains. He's like, sure do, brother. As rumors swirl from the real GM that the Sixers are in talks to see what they can get for Embiid in the offseason. Like, you want to take a team down that you think was supposed to be a contender early in the season. The 76ers are ripe for the picking. This team is just absolutely imploding.
Is Joel Embiid getting into the Jay Cutler body language realm? Like, Jay Cutler is the king of bad body language.
He's a sour face sometimes.
Yeah. Joel Embiid, oof.
I can't stand bad body language. It's the worst. The worst. What, for everybody involved. Everybody involved. It's just bad. The whole social media stuff, it's like, come on, guys. What other sport do they have where guys feud on social media? I'm trying to think.
I NFL? Love it, though. You don't like it?
Or it's a little too
NFL,
much.
They have it.
Spoken nothing like, a true nothing, hockey like boy, nothing like the NBA.
You got to follow Richard Sherman's Twitter account if you don't think it's in the NFL.
Nothing like the NBA.
Darrell Revis and Richard Sherman have had it out. And Revis is retired, but have had it out repeatedly. The NBA is top notch for this, but it drives content.
Yeah.
It drives conversation. It sets up anticipated matchups. It's a Tuesday night in the middle of bloody February, and we want to watch the Miami Heat play whoever Jimmy Butler's been on about in the last couple of weeks.
Trae Young.
Trae Young.
Remember when Trae Young's like, it's over. And then the Atlanta Hawks went on to lose. And then Jimmy Butler posted him being like, it's over. And then a montage of the Heat's buckets to win the game. Yeah. No one cares about the Atlanta Hawks.
I'm okay with that one. When he said it was over and they came back to lose. I'm okay going to social media.
They came
media.
Back to lose.
I'm okay for that. You can go on
it's
social
a comeback
media.
I want nothing to be a part of.
Snatch defeat out of the jaws of victory. One more thing on the standings, because look, it's an epic heater, 15 in a row. They're into Brooklyn tomorrow night, their final game before the All-Star break. Milwaukee at 46-7. We've talked about them. The Raptors are now 40-14. The only other team better in the NBA is the Los Angeles Lakers, who, like the Raptors, have 40 victories but have played two fewer games. So they are 40-12. What does that mean? It means the Raptors are better than the Clippers. And we know who plays for the Clippers.
Paul George.
Yes.
Lou Williams.
Yes. We know who is on the bench for the Clippers. Doc Rivers. But it's quite a run. It's quite a run. And again, they'll be in Brooklyn tomorrow night, the final game before the All-Star break.
And just a quick, I know we're moving on, but just a quick notion. This season, way more fun than last season. And the reason that I say that is because last year there was so much on the line. There was so much at stake after DeMar was sent packing and Kawhi was brought in and load management was an issue and Pascal's development was an issue and the bench and the big trade at the deadline. There was so much pressure on this team to perform. And listen, they lived up to expectations, but the ride, not as enjoyable as this season has been when expectations have been lowered immensely and they've risen above them.
Well, and I'll add one thing to that list that you put out there, and it's tied to Kawhi and load management. Any player can get injured at any time, but there was always that, is that thing in his quad going to flare up and screw this all up? That was always right in the back of our minds, right? Is he playing tonight? Is he not playing tonight? Is he not playing tonight because his load is being managed, or is he not playing tonight because maybe the quad's hurting? And if he's the quad's hurting, is he going to miss the next game too? Is this going to turn into a 2-game, 4-game, 6-game, 2-week, 1-month deal? Like, so there's all that stuff. So there, but it's back to what we were saying a month ago, like the little engine that could business too. Yeah. They're no longer the little engine.
No.
They're.
What they are is they're a pimp my ride engine in a jalopy. But when you open the hood, you're just like, damn. Okay.
Look at those new rims.
I didn't know your pistons were firing like that.
Hey, don't bring Dwayne Casey into this. Look at this.
Oh, no. Oh,
sorry.
Hi, Dwayne. Nice sad. Man.
He is a very nice man. The Leafs host the Coyotes tonight. So this is one of Mike Zygmantas' former teams. Heady days in Phoenix, Arizona. And
long time ago.
Frederik Andersen. I mean, Sheldon Keefe was hedging yesterday afternoon if Freddie's going to be back. But this is a good sign, right? Because there's uncertainty surrounding that injury. Is it going to be a week? Is it going to be a few weeks? You just don't know, head, neck, whatever it could be.
Well, they need him back.
That is absolutely.
Campbell's been good his first couple, but we need Freddie.
And Jack Campbell is a guy who can Corey Schwab it for you, if I can date myself the better part of 20 years. If, like when Cujo broke his hand out of the Olympics in 2002, Corey Schwab took the Leafs on a 6-7-8 game run while Cujo recuperated. Jack Campbell can be that guy for you, but Jack Campbell is not playing 40 games and your team making the playoffs.
But we're comfortable if he had to play the next 10 in a row.
Sure. Well, you wouldn't have had a choice. You would have had to. It's a better option than Michael Hutchinson.
Yeah, well,
at this point.
Well, Hutchinson's done at this. Yeah, he's not going to get in another game, barring any major injury. So, yeah, when your MVP goes down, usually you'll dip a little bit. And now that they have Campbell in net, there's just more confidence. They feel comfortable enough to, I don't like this, but they feel comfortable to sit back. And we saw that in Montreal. So when you have that confidence as a player and you have that guy in it, and we talked about this earlier on the season, it changes the way you play your game. Your mindset as a player is different if you don't have confidence in your goaltender. And when a guy like Campbell's in net, you can almost see the game in Montreal. It's a little bit different. I didn't like what I saw in Anaheim. Anaheim game was just was a little bit of some buffoonery. You know what I mean? Like just on the PP, giving the pucks up, the defensive zone breakdown, like just a little too much. So that was the difference in both of those. But you can just see Montreal. Yeah, they know what he can do back there. They can back in. They shots from the outside, and it changes, right? Changes the dynamic of a team and the way they attack. So it's a big boost for this team. But at the same time, we want Anderson back.
We want Freddie. We want Freddie. Some kind of cheer that needs to be started in Scotiabank Arena the next time we get the opportunity. But don't you... Okay, so here's the thing, though. You're right about Freddie coming back. Like, we need him back. This team needs saves. Their offense has been good. We've watched them claw their way back into a lot of games after tough starts or after they've given up leads. They've always had an opportunity to win. Their defense has been better at times. I think that it was Sheldon Keefe, right? We played the sound yesterday when he's like, you're not going to really win a 1-0 game in the NHL today. Things are a little bit more different than that. They're a little bit more free flowing. It's a very hard thing to accomplish, whether or not he's covering for his team. But I think that there's something to that. If you looked at the results and the number of 2-1 games, 1-0 games that there has been this year compared to 5 years ago, I feel like the numbers would be drastically different. So the defense, okay, maybe it's been a little bit better. There's been moments in this new structure where they've struggled, but they just haven't gotten the saves. That's been the biggest difference from the last 2 years, is that the saves haven't been there. And I'm not saying it's Freddie's fault, but we've talked about how he hasn't been as good as he had been before.
He's a 917 to 919 save percentage guy in his
forever
first
and always.
Three seasons
yes.
in Toronto. He's 910-ish
yeah.
now, and it could be that 0.08 or so of a percentage point that is playoffs or no playoffs. Or like I said yesterday, the backup goaltender, with Jack Campbell, doing the McElhinney toe save. It could be a toe save or a non-toe save, a goal against, the final weekend of the season. That is the difference for this team. They've got Arizona in town tonight. We're all over that over the course of the program. Major League Baseball, now it's got to collectively bargain this or at least talk to the players about it. And they might want to leave Trevor Bauer out of the room. Although that is kind of an evergreen comment. In anything you want to do in life, you want to leave Trevor Bauer out of the room. Guy is...
That was a little too much for him.
Just sign someone as proxy.
Like, what's he thinking?
What's Trevor Bauer thinking?
Yeah.
Okay, you can step out of the studio and you could do a 4-year psychological thesis on what Trevor Bauer is thinking.
Called the commissioner.
Like, called Rob Manfred an idiot. Or more or less. Doesn't know anything about baseball.
You're a joke.
So what we have right now... 5 playoff teams in each league, right? You got the 3 division winners and then the 2 wild cards that play the play-in game for the right to advance to a division series. What Major League Baseball is proposing is an additional 2 teams per league, which would bring, of course, the American and National League playoff representation in each postseason to 7 teams. An odd number. So how do we get around that? The best team in each league would have a bye in the first round. The second best team, which is to say the division winner with the second best record, would be considered the top seed and would be able to select its opponent out of the 3 wild card teams. So now it's like, oh, you think we suck? Okay, you want to play us. So the second seeded team picks a wild card team. The third seeded team, i.e. the worst of the 3 division winners, then picks its opponent out of the 2 remaining wild card teams, which then leaves the best wild card team remaining to host the other wild card team. Do you follow?
I follow. It sounds like you. It sounds like me trying to explain the new NBA All-Star format. So I'm with you on it.
It's not even close, but okay.
I'm with you on it, but I just don't. I'm torn. I'm all for having more teams rewarded for playing a grueling season.
Yes.
Okay? I think that it's really, really exclusive company that obviously gets to make them Major League Baseball postseason. And after you play 162 games, I want more teams to be rewarded for their good play. I'm all in on that. The problem is the selection of the wild card team that you want to face. It would make for amazing headlines, amazing fodder, but I just don't. This is not an all-star game. This is not supposed to be something that's kitschy where you're like, yeah, I want, it's like a calling someone out in the playground. That's not what this is supposed to be. You play for seeding and that's supposed to matter. And I don't think that a team who's already at an advantage because they're a higher seed should get an even more favorable advantage by picking an opponent they feel like they match up against better.
But I wonder if part of this, there's a bunch of different ways. I wonder if part of this, to pick up on your point, Ashley, is to sort of drive some of that
the rivalry,
social media rivalry. Oh, so if I'm Mike Trout, and not that Mike Trout would do this.
What, make the playoffs?
Well, not only make the playoffs, but say something. But let's just say the LA Angels are the worst of the American League teams to make the playoffs, and some team picks the Angels. Would he go on his Twitter account? This is a terrible example because it's Mike Trout, but would he go on his Twitter account and say, oh, you think we suck?
Yeah.
And then it gets the conversation going back and forth. People chime in. What I don't like about this is the bye for the best team. Because baseball is a game that is played every single day for the most part for 6 months. And if you are sitting there, I mean, it gives you an opportunity to get your rotation in order. But if you are sitting there for 5 or 6 days after the regular season ends in September, waiting for some kind of opponent, and their games are spread out enough that they can set their rotation and they've stayed in the flow of playing, I think that's a disadvantage for the best team.
I like all of it. I love giving rest to the top team. I love the fact that you can pick your opponent. I think it's huge. I would make sure I dial it in when I'm watching. I mean, do I care about every single series in MLB? No. But if I saw them picking who they had to play, I'm definitely tuning in.
Well, here's what I also like about it. Okay, because I've given you my hesitation. The top seed bye worries me. What I do like about it is it might lead more teams to try. Too many teams are tanking.
Yeah, I agree. They have
too many teams aren't trying to win.
Yeah, they need more teams in the playoffs. You play 162 games, and then all of a sudden it's like the playoffs are done in 2 weeks. They need to change their format.
But those teams that would be tanking, I don't think that they would even still think that they're a top seven. It might solve that middling group that we always talk about, the mushy middle, but I don't think it solves the bottom third and their tanking. And I also will say I love a one game wild card. This would be a 3-game wild card situation, which, to Mike's point, is he interested in every series? No. So, okay, everyone's watching the one series where the top seed picked their opponent, but no one's really paying attention to anything else until we get to the divisional series. And then to our colleague J.D. Bunkus's point last night in a tweet in all caps, this is the MLB trying to distract from the fact that the Houston Astros cheated and potentially cost the LA Dodgers 2 World Series title. And oh yeah, we're still waiting for the Red Sox report to be put out because we haven't heard anything about that. And oh yeah, pitchers and catchers are reporting in 9 days and the Red Sox don't have a manager and they just traded away their best player. But for sure, let's just talk about some schoolyard antics about picking a team in the playoffs.
Well, I do think it's an interesting concept.
For sure.
But I also, we touched on this on Writer's Block on the roundtable yesterday afternoon, agree with all of that. This is the shiny object.
Look over here.
The kitchen is a mess. A complete mess after a baking incident. So let's go smash some pots and pans in the dining room so that everybody runs over there and looks over, right? That absolutely is part of it. And so we'll cut through the crap with John Paul Morosi at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. We'll discuss the new proposed playoff format, but we'll also get into the latest with Codebreaker, the Houston Astros story. all of her luck is Andrew's dad, but he's also the commissioner of Vince McMahon's XFL. They negotiated with Colin Kaepernick, but couldn't get him signed into the league. Oliver Luck at 7:30. More to come after that. Hugh Burrell's next with the six-pack.
Now let's crack open the six-pack. The top stories we're talking about this morning. One.
All right, make it 15 straight for the Raptors. A 137-126 win over the T-Wolves. The 15-game winning streak is now the longest in Canadian professional team sport history, surpassing the 14-game streak by the Stampeders in 2016. Pascal Siakam says big reason for the streak is the fact that everybody's just enjoying themselves.
Every time we can go out there, have some fun, play basketball, and enjoy each other's, you know, like, company. And you can see it out there, you know, whenever somebody's doing great, you know, like, everyone feels like they're doing great. And that's just how we are, and it feels good. It feels good to win.
Yeah, just have fun and try your best. A chance to make it 16 tomorrow night in Brooklyn. They will. And then after that, it's Phoenix, Indy, Milwaukee, and Charlotte. So they come up with a good game against Milwaukee. There's a chance... A chance for a 20-game winning streak.
Hugh, if they come up with a good game against every team they play, there's a chance they never lose again.
That's right. What is the best record? Is it 73-9?
The Warriors, 73-9.
73-9.
And then, like Brady's perfect Patriots, they didn't cap the season with a championship.
Yeah. When does this streak end? What of these next four games after Brooklyn? Oh, we'll count Brooklyn as five.
As long, if Kyrie's playing, it's a win against Brooklyn.
If he's playing.
Yeah, if he's not, then, I said what then I the said. Nets have a chance, yeah.
Yeah.
They have to be careful, though, don't they, of looking ahead past some of these teams to that game against Milwaukee. They got Brooklyn, Phoenix, and Indy before they play the Bucks.
Do you think they look ahead, though? I mean, this team...
It doesn't seem like it, but there's motivated. Always that chance, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've won 15 in a row. You're obviously feeling pretty good about yourself. Players, to the extent that they look at the standings, maybe they do, maybe they don't, but they are still in a dogfight for a crucial spot. The motivating factor is the fact that these guys just go out and play their asses off every single night, and they do so consistently, even in games that they lose. They'll bring it. It's going to end at some point, but we know they'll bring it. I don't think they take anything for granted.
You could see them just wringing the life and will to play out of the Minnesota Timberwolves in the second half. You could just feel the tides changing. I hope if this team took one thing away from Kawhi Leonard, it's that the regular season is just practice for the Holy Grail.
Yeah, I
agree. Two.
Team President Masai Ujiri is being sued by a police officer for an incident moments after the Raptors clinched the NBA championship in Oakland last June. Officer Alan Strickland alleges Ujiri struck him in the face and chest with both fists as Ujiri tried to enter the floor to join his team's celebration. The suit claims that Strickland, quote, suffered injury to his body and great mental, emotional, psychological, physical, and nervous pain and suffering. He goes on to state that Strickland has suffered great anxiety, embarrassment, anger, loss of enjoyment of life, injury to reputation, and severe emotional and physical distress in an amount to be determined at trial. Strickland's lawyers are seeking about $75,000 in damages here.
It is embarrassing when you accuse someone of something and then legally the court system decides that there can't be criminal charges pressed. That is embarrassing. I understand why Alan is stressed out that on a global stage, there's been proven not to be enough evidence to go ahead with criminal charges. So he's reverted to civil in this instance.
Do we see? What's the possibility?
I want to see the report from the doctor. Like, somebody had to actually
write that.
Write that out. Like, they didn't just make that up. He saw a doctor, and they actually said he's suffering from all those things.
I mean, but to like, I could go out and get my thumb jammed
Alan. Me too.
Yeah, I could go out there and get my thumb jammed in the Tassimo machine and take 6 months off work. Like, are you kidding? The best part by the stupidest is the claim that Masai has a history of this. You okay over there?
Based on what?
A predisposition to violence.
Yeah.
Did you read that part?
Yeah.
A predisposition to violence.
Like, where's he getting that from? You know,
he's getting that from the lawsuit playbook from the most litigious society on the planet.
Vigorous high fives at Giants of Africa.
In the officer's defense, he wasn't wearing the proper credentials.
3.
Oh, the Leafs at home to the Coyotes tonight. Good news, Leafs fans. Looks like Freddie will be back. Looks like he's good to go after being a full participant at practice.
It's feeling good. I think obviously the first practice back with the team today was pretty positive. So yeah, been a good process so far. Taking the right steps in the right time fashion and day to day right now. But yeah, we'll see.
Now, is there a more important player to the Leafs' playoff fortunes than Freddie Anderson? The answer is no.
It's no, but we are a lot more comfortable with Campbell in the net. And if Freddie's out for any kind of extended period of time, there's confidence in this team. They play a little bit differently, and that's you need that in a backup.
And because of that, because of the confidence that they have in Campbell, do the Leafs lighten Freddie's workload down the stretch here a little bit?
Well, I think it is totally dependent on where they are in the standings. I'll add another important player, Hugh, and that's actually a bunch of them. Every single defenseman who is active right now is the most important player on this Leafs roster as well, because if they suffer one more injury on that back end, it gets ugly thin quickly.
Yeah, play the Coyotes tonight. Coyotes knocked off the Habs last night, 3-2.
4.
I like this. Major League Baseball is considering inviting more teams to the postseason party. Report says the number of playoff teams in each league could jump from 5 to 7 by 2022. The team with the best record would get a bye into the divisional round. Other two division winners and the team with the next best record would then get to host all 3 games of a wild card series against an opponent of their choosing. Reds pitcher Trevor Bauer hates the idea, actually took to Twitter to call Commissioner Rob Manfred a joke. I like this. Because I'll tell you why.
Would.
Because half the teams in Major League Baseball are out of it mid-June and their fan bases have nothing to cheer about. So why not put a couple more teams in to spark interest and keep the thing going?
We're aligned in that sense.
Yeah.
I think, as I said before, there is such a long season. It's so grueling to reward a couple more teams for positive performance throughout that time, the 6-month span. I'm all for it. The selection of your opponent into a 3-game series where they don't get an opportunity to play in front of their home crowd, does that even really matter then for the fan base if there's an opportunity that they won't even get to see postseason baseball? If it's one and done, obviously you're not going to get an opportunity to go back home. If it's a 3-game series, one of those games should be at the other ballpark. It just should. And secondly, it's just such a playground mentality. I think it would drive interest in that one series. I don't know how it affects the rest.
It's a significant break with tradition, right? For a sport.
But I'm done with baseball tradition.
Well, baseball finished
steeped in it. Yeah.
Baseball finished with its tradition when it created interleague play in the late 1990s.
Brought in the designated hitter, which ruined everything.
And I think the National League. No, I think the National League will have the designated hitter here in the next in the next year or two. So I do like the creativity behind this. And we're not going to get fewer than 162 games, although I think we should talk about that. Owners want the revenue. Start spring training earlier. Get the regular season underway in the second to last week of March so that the playoffs don't bleed deep into November. You can't have the Minnesota Twins playing home games in the second week of November. It is minus a lot in Minneapolis by then.
But the only problem with that is that it's minus a lot sometimes mid-March. Here, New York, Chicago.
Put the dome teams
the dome
and the
teams
SoCal teams at home.
No, yeah. But you could structure the schedule in a way to make sure as many games as possible are either indoors or in southern climes, right?
Of course, baseball's never really gotten that logic.
Oh, no.
Why would we count on it now?
5.
All right, let's talk about August 4th, 2017. The Jays were playing the Astros in Houston. Jays reliever Mike Bolsinger tagged for 4 runs, 4 hits, 3 walks, and just a third of an inning. Astros won the game. Bolsinger never pitched again in the major league. So he's launched a lawsuit alleging the Astros sign-stealing cost him his career. On writer's block yesterday, Wall Street Journal national baseball writer Jared Diamond said he doesn't think the lawsuit will go anywhere, but it's more about principle.
It's just an interesting case study. It does seem like more than anything else, he's trying to make a point, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have to imagine this is more about the principle of it than his actual career.
Now, Bolsinger wants the Astros to forfeit the nearly $31 million in bonuses from the World Series championship that year, with the funds going to charities in L.A. focused on bettering kids' lives. He also wants to create a fund for retired baseball players who needs financial assistance. So this is doesn't seem like it's a cash grab by Bolsinger. It's a very principled argument.
Well, I like what we just heard there in the clip from Writer's Block. It really is just about the principle and making the point. I mean, Mike Bolsinger was not going to make $31 million over the remainder of his career. I would argue that he probably wasn't going to make $2 or $3 million more over the course of his career. But he does have a right to be aggrieved. I just don't think this is going to go anywhere. The one thing it could do is if it happens to get to trial, we then have testimony and then we then have evidence presented. And it never hurts to know more.
Six.
Finish up with this. Philip Rivers' era with the Chargers now officially over after the veteran QB and the team have mutually agreed to part ways. That should lead to plenty more speculation about where Tom Brady is going, maybe to the Chargers. So my question to you guys is, where does Philip Rivers land? Here are five potential teams: Tampa, Indy, Carolina, Tennessee, and Jacksonville. Which of those teams is the best spot for Philip Rivers?
Uh-huh. Well, Tampa Bay is at least used to having a quarterback with a prediction for throwing interceptions. Uh-huh. So if Philip Rivers ends up in Tampa Bay, Bruce Arians, I think any of those five destinations is a landing spot. I don't mind Jacoby Brissett in Indianapolis, for example. I don't know what Philip Rivers gives you other than reputation at this point in his career. The Tennessee Titans have a relatively big decision to make here on Ryan Tannehill. If you're going with Rivers, doesn't matter what team you are, if you're going with Rivers, you have decided that you are drafting a quarterback, if not this April, then next April.
Yeah, he becomes a
because
bit of a
he's not a long-term guy. He's a stopgap, and you have to hope he has something left. But he threw some bad footballs for the Chargers this year.
I think worse than a stopgap, I think he's a backup.
I don't think he's going to go anywhere to
retire.
Be a backup.
Yeah.
Maybe not, but you named Jacoby Brissett, for example. You don't think that a team is going to go ahead and see what he's got in the first game or two, and then if he decides that he's not going to be able to play up to their standard, that they're like, okay, Phil, you know what you're in. We want you as a mentor in a quarterback battle. Maybe that's how they phrase it. It's going to be a quarterback battle. Nothing certain until we see at camp how things go. He's been not good with the Chargers the last 2 years. Their numbers and his numbers have not been good in terms of receiving.
He's moved back home to Florida, so I would guess either Tampa or Jacksonville. Or if I were him, I'd go to whatever team has the best offensive line.
But here's the thing. They love Jameis Winston in Tampa. By all accounts, the players love him. He's super motivational. They're all on board, even though he absolutely gives them less of a chance to win than Colin Kaepernick.
Just as a spinoff to that conversation, Brady to the Chargers intrigues me for this reason. They are the second tenant in that brand new mall of a stadium at Hollywood Park. It's Stan Kroenke's park, the Rams owner. He built it. The Chargers are the second tenant. They're the poor cousin.
They're the Clippers.
If Tom Brady were to end up in Los Angeles for 1 year,
yep,
1 year. And remember, the Chargers are still San Diego's team. There are more Raiders fans in L.A. than there are Chargers fans Rams fans, right? So if Brady were to end up there, that'd at least bring a little bit of cachet to that organization. Don't see it happening necessarily, but it's just a thought. 30 years ago today, a one-hit wonder happened in professional sports. We'll revisit it next.
Tyson trying to end it with one big shot again. He's down, he comes with the uppercut. Come on, Robin Buster's throwing shot back. Look at him in. Look at Buster coming back. Did he fuck on the legs of Mike? I don't know, he shot him again. Oh, nice uppercut by Buster Douglas. Look at that. He's down, Mike Tyson down. For the first time in his career, Mike Tyson hits the canvas. He's in big trouble. He may not be able to recover. It's up to seven and eight. He's not going to make it.
Notorious Z.I.G.
Never heard that before.
More money, more problems. Not since last segment. 30 years ago today, and Hugh Burrell sticks around in studio because he's the one who remembers this best. You may remember it as well. 30 years ago today, a 23-year-old with a record in the ring of 37-0, which included 33 knockouts, by the name of Mike Tyson, was KO'd by James Buster Douglas in an unbelievable upset in Japan's Tokyo Dome 30 years ago, February the 11th, 1990. So I'm 10 and a half going on 11. I remember my dad telling me Mike Tyson lost. I wasn't a big boxing guy, wasn't a big boxing kid, but I absolutely remember being told Mike Tyson lost and going, wow. Like, we all knew who he was.
Yeah, he's one of those.
And that boxing was still
sport.
More of a thing at that point.
Boxing was still a very big deal at the time. And I remember two gigantic upsets in the world of sport during my life. And I think they're the two biggest upsets ever. Number one was the Miracle on Ice, 1980. And Buster Douglas beating Mike Tyson. Everything has to be put in context, right? So here's the context. At the time, Mike Tyson was the baddest man on the planet. Wasn't even close. Like, most of his fights, he was 37-0 coming in, and most of those fights were won before the opening bell even sounded because guys were simply afraid to fight him. They really were. Professional boxers were afraid to get into the ring with this guy. So along comes Buster Douglas, who a couple of weeks before the fight lost his grandmother, and that completely changed his life. There's a great 30 for 30. On this fight and the lead up to it. But it changed him. And all of a sudden, he had nothing to lose. And he was the only guy to fight Mike Tyson to step into the ring that wasn't afraid because he didn't care. And when you fight someone who doesn't care and is not afraid, that's a very dangerous position to be in. This fight was in Tokyo, at the Tokyo Dome, I believe it was. It was on pay-per-view. It was early in the morning. Over here, hardly anybody saw it because he's going to pound Buster who? That's what we all thought. Like, nobody, 42-1 were the odds for Mike Tyson. 10th round. Not only did Mike Tyson lose the fight, he got knocked the blank out. He got beat up badly. This is like on the school ground when all of a sudden the bully loses a fight and everybody goes, oh, not invincible anymore. And this really was the beginning of the end for Mike Tyson. Yeah. It's a seminal moment in sports. It's unbelievably crucial to the fight game and to Mike Tyson's career. It was never the same after this. Neither was Buster Douglas, who, you know, ballooned up, got fat, and was never anything. He was a shadow of himself. Yeah.
As we all are,
tell me about it.
You know, okay. So are you... You sound super passionate about this. I know that you're a boxing fan, and I know we have to go in a second. Just quickly, are you disappointed that boxing's not in the general consciousness of the average sports fan anymore? Or do you understand why?
I am disappointed, but I still think there are people out there who can bring it back. Guys okay. like Canelo. He's out there to fight. Golovkin is another guy. They can bring the sport back, hopefully.
30 years ago today, Buster Douglas KOs Mike Tyson. John Paul Morosi on the other side on the proposed new playoff format in Major League Baseball. Code breaker, the impending punishment as well of the Boston Red Sox. And at some point, we got to talk about some of these dogs at the Westminster Kennel Club dog show. Easy for me to say. Leafs have the Coyotes in town tonight. The Raptors are off tonight after their franchise record extending 15th consecutive win. They're into Brooklyn tomorrow night. Pitchers and catchers reporting to spring training soon, and plenty going on in the world of Major League Baseball. Most of it not of the good news variety. To get into a lot of that and the proposed new playoff format that was unveiled yesterday, we welcome our good friend, our favorite code breaker, John Paul Morosi of MLB Network. Hello, sir.
good morning. You'd think that they would have chosen a less obvious name for said scheme, don't you think?
You would. You would think that they wouldn't name it after the.
They were going to get caught, but just in case, right? Maybe they could have come up with something a little more, subtle, perhaps.
I'll say this for the Astros, like, and Jeff Luhnow. And I don't necessarily say it positively, but I'm saying it. You don't give a crap, you don't give a crap. He's never been a guy who gives a crap, and he's very clear about that publicly. Whether he's saying it overtly, John, or not, his body language and everything just tells you, I don't give a crap. If you think I'm breaking the rules, right. Whatever. Well, I mean, he cares now because he's out of a job, but he didn't back then.
Correct. And I think that what happened and the Astros obviously are the most egregious example of it, but I think in general we have just had not enough people giving a crap to your point about the game itself and the sport overall, and I think that is one of the overriding issues at why the game has endured a pretty tough off season from the standpoint of the off the field news, and it's again it's just sort of one decision after another of not really being aware and caring about the overall integrity of the sport, and this has happened also in less egregious and less illegal ways, and the quick example I'll use is that the Astros took the advent of expanded technology and the ability to use information to gain every last edge possible and took it to a nefarious degree. But there also has been the issue of every single last advantage exploited within the course of the game, which is why the games have been longer and why you've seen teams make decisions about, well, I could make myself a little more competitive as a club. It would be better for my fans. It would cost me more money, but we can make some different approaches to really have a dramatic rebuild that by the metrics is borne out as being correct, but it probably doesn't result in the best overall product in the sport. So you're just seeing, I think, on and off the field, in game and out of game, a lot of decisions made that are, to your point, not really giving as much consideration to the overall good of the game and focusing more on what's good for me, what's good for my immediate selfish interests. And I think that's why we have seen some not so wonderful headlines for the sport over the course of the winter.
Yeah, but there's a big difference between tanking and what the Astros did.
There is. There's You're exactly right about that.
We shouldn't equate that.
And that's a very good point, actually. And I would just make the point that in general, there has been one more step down that path of not really worrying about the game itself,
right.
I think, has taken people a little further away from where the essence of the game ought to be. But you're exactly right, and that is to me this is obviously it's illegal and it's been penalized at a very, very severe extent. But there's I think we're at a spot in the game where there needs to be a bit of renewed thought about what the greater good of the game looks like, and perhaps then actually spring training arriving at a very good time. I think everybody needs just to get outside, get some sunshine, and start reflecting about how fortunate everybody is to be involved in the game.
Yeah, get a big rainfall to wash away all the stink. But before
exactly.
we can do
yeah.
that, though, John, we do need some kind of outcome in this Red Sox investigation, which we have yet to hear really anything about. What do you know? What's the status? And when can we find out the punishment for those involved?
The idea is this week. And I think that's the commissioner has had that as a goal. Pitchers and catchers are reporting this week. The season is beginning. The Red Sox, they are short one Mookie Betts and David Price, and they do not have a manager right now. So they need to kind of figure out their own path forward. And there was the report last week that they would like to hire Ron Renicki, but they want to wait until the outcome of the investigation, which seems prudent because, of course, Ron is coming from within and was around in 2018. So they just want to make sure that he is cleared of any wrongdoing in the investigation that's about to be finalized. So I think that to me is a part of the decision making process. But I would say the idea, Ashley, is that this week there will be a conclusion to the investigation, a ruling of some kind, and as according to reports, as long as Ron Renicki is not named in said report in a negative way, very possibly will be the next or at least interim manager of the Red Sox this year.
With John Paul Morosi of MLB Network, this is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Did Mookie Betts make it clear to the Boston Red Sox that he would not sign a long-term contract, John? Because I just have absolutely no idea how a team with the resources of the Boston Red Sox would otherwise deal the man who is clearly the second-best player behind Mike Trout in the entire sport.
Right. Three things. Number one, I do think that they did conclude through his rejection of at least one proposal in excess of $200 million in recent years that he was just not going to sign there. And I think that was a fair assessment, and they reacted accordingly. I think the issue, if you're a Red Sox fan who is upset about the circumstances out there listening and wondering why they did this, this was, in my judgment, the issue is not so much deciding to trade Mookie Betts. It was the number of signings they made previous to this that crowded out that possibility. The Eovaldi signing, the Sale signing to pitchers who were even at the time of somewhat unclear health. When you sign, there's an adage, and it's very true, and it's very simple. You can't sign everybody when you win. And they won, and they tried to sign just about everybody, and they said, oh, wait a minute, we don't have enough money left for Mookie. That's kind of a problem. He's our guy. Oops, so we signed everybody else, and now we can't afford him anymore. So the issue of your Red Sox fan is, be upset about the Eovaldi and Sale decisions, because that is what has led us to this point. The third, and I think also key part of this is, I would love to know the Red Sox fans and to have them stand and be accounted for and raise their hand and tell me how many of them a week ago said, you know what, we've got a really strong chance of finishing ahead of the Yankees this year based on the way the roster is set up and based on the really, their rotation, the Red Sox rotation, is incredibly thin, in my opinion. And so if they were going to say, you know what, the Yankees added Gerrit Cole and they've to a team that already won the division and was substantially better than we were last year, but we think we've got objectively a much better chance to win the division than they do. And if that's the case, then okay, that I would accept that. But I just don't think that's reality. I think this is a team that was already going to finish in about third place with Mookie, and they could probably finish in third or fourth place without Mookie, and there was about zero chance he was going to sign with them. So I think that you take all those factors together. While it's a bad look for a team like the Red Sox to have to make this move, it actually is, as one rival GM told me yesterday, it was a very logical decision. And it was. It may not feel like the right decision. It is one that you can criticize, but it was logical as of this week. The issue that I have was the decisions that were made leading up to it. And if you're going to hold the line on the luxury tax threshold, you probably shouldn't have signed both Sale and Eovaldi a year ago.
The problem, of course, is that he is the second best player in baseball. And if they thought a $200-plus million offer was going to secure him, he's got to get more than Harper. If the market bears itself out in a fair way, he comes in under Trout and he's above Bryce Harper. Because I think he's a better player. We want to get into the playoff format or the proposed changes, but very quickly on the Jock Peterson to the Angels, that falling through, how weird is that going to be with the Dodgers and Jock Peterson? Because he lost his arbitration hearing, and then he didn't get traded. Will he be a Dodger in a couple weeks? Or are they going to have to peddle him out?
It's a great question, Scott. And I think that the number of teams that really want him is a pretty low number right now. And one of the other key things that you got to remember too that is possible is if it's an arbitration contract, it's not guaranteed. So if they go through spring training and if it doesn't work out, they could just release him. Now, you would still owe him termination pay, but you would not owe him the full amount. And for a team that's wary of its luxury tax responsibilities, and certainly now is still under it, as we've been discussing a lot here in recent weeks, it's possible that they could just release him. But that's where Jock is going to, as much as this is very difficult for him, being a good citizen actually is really important because he does not have a guaranteed contract. And so report, be in good shape, be in good spirits, be a great teammate, as hard as that may be under the circumstances, and just kind of go along with the plan here. Because usually someone gets hurt around baseball. There's probably an outfielder that will get hurt. He is a 30-homer guy. I mean, he's not someone that was just clinging to a spot in the big league. So I would just say surprise. There are not that many teams right now that need a bat, which is why they were ready to trade him to their nearest geographic neighbor, which they don't often do. But I would say to Jock, my advice would be just kind of do your best to put on a brave face in spring training, and something will probably work out elsewhere. Because if it doesn't, then being released is possible.
Left-handed bat can't hit left-handed pitching, but that doesn't really matter. I wouldn't mind the Jays taking a sniff around him. I don't know if they have but I wouldn't mind them exploring it.
Yeah, he could do some damage at Rogers Center for sure. It's certainly a very hitter-friendly ballpark, very conducive to his swing. I think that actually is a pretty good idea.
With John Paul Morosi of MLB Network, this is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
New MLB playoff format now expanding the number of teams and adding in the fact that the winners of the division get to pick who they play. What's your favorite part, or what do you like about the new format proposed by the league?
Well, it's really interesting, Mike. I mean, I like the fact that the more teams are involved. I like the fact that it shows imagination. This to me is, certainly baseball has been criticized a little bit in recent years about, as we discussed earlier, the teams that have not been spending up to their capability to try to win immediately. This is really important in that respect, super important, because when you add two more playoff teams, what does it do? It changes the nature of the algorithm that all these teams use to determine how much they should spend. Because now a playoff berth is more attainable, and it also is not just a one-and-done game. One of the biggest criticisms that you hear about the trade deadline and even free agency is, how much am I going to spend to just have a chance to win one game? And that's one of the things that's held up as being a reason to not spend. And so this removes that. It's a three-game series. The notion of a draft of opponents is a little avant-garde, but again, I think the game, I think baseball at times is criticized as not being contemporary enough. And then when they come up with a contemporary idea, some people don't like it. There's always a critic, I think, in that realm. But I like it. It's different. It involves more teams. It eliminates the one and done nature of the start of the playoffs. And I think incentivizes teams to be more active at the trade deadline as well. It is different, but then again, a Stanley Cup playoffs without the Norris Division playoffs were also different at one point in time, and we've all moved past it and gotten used to understanding the wild card format in hockey. So there are different format changes that occur over time. This would certainly be different, but I think I focus on the positive side, which is the fun nature of the selection show to begin, the expanded number of teams in the dance. and the elimination of the one and done nature of the wild card round.
All right, John, before we let you go, I've got four words for you, and when I throw them out there, I want you to tell me what I'm talking about.
Uh-oh.
You ready? It's bright and early.
I'm a little scared, but I'm ready.
14, 39, and 4. Do you know what I'm talking about? 14, 39,
it's too
4.
Early in the morning for me to figure out logic.
The Detroit
Red Wings.
The Detroit Red Wings, John Paul Morosi. Your Detroit Red Wings and their record.
I just know that we're 31st, okay? That's
the one number
that's
you
I
know.
Would say. I know that we're 31st. I know that we had some pretty good luck in those old Norris Division playoffs back in the day. But we're, it's... Again, how close are we to getting Alexis Lafreniere? That's what I want to know.
Well, I'll tell you.
The record itself, I kind of had a sense there's probably going to be some Red Wings Schadenfreude, but they've had a pretty good half century, quarter century actually, and the only number I really know for sure is 31, and that's where they stand.
All right, we won't pick at the scab any further. Thanks, my friend.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it, my friends. Great catching up.
Bye.
Thanks. John Paul Morosi of MLB Network. Poor guy. 14, 39, and 4. Oof.
He's sticking by him.
Well, you got to. You got to in the worst case scenario. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We stuck by the Leafs for like a decade and a half.
Think for yourself.
We did. They haven't won a playoff series since 2004.
It's been a minute.
I was a kid.
And I was younger than that.
I was younger than that. I was younger than a kid. What were you saying off air earlier? I was a glint in my parents' eyes back at that time. Oh, my God. Ziggy, you were still playing in 2004. I mean, think of it that way,
I was
too.
Just breaking in. Never mind playing.
You were just breaking in.
My first draft.
Yeah, it was my third year, second year.
I was
still in my entry-level contract. I did not have a mullet.
What was
that's the first time he's gotten defensive.
We need to do a segment. What were we doing in our lives the last time the Leafs won a playoff series? Okay. Not made the playoffs, obviously, but won a series. Jeez. 16.
Text us. 16
years ago. What was going... Yes, text us at 590, 590. What was happening in your life?
Compared to now.
Who were you back then? What did you care about?
I was a lock monster.
Tell us about your life. Was it two marriages ago? Was it three bankruptcies ago? Like,
why does it have to be negative?
Yeah, why can't it be something good? I got my first car.
Have you had your kids?
Yes.
Good stuff, too. Tell us about the degree that you got.
Yes, or six of them. Oliver Luck is the commissioner of the XFL. And he is going to join us. If that last name is familiar to you, but you don't know who Oliver is, he is Andrew Luck's dad. He is a former NFL quarterback himself, having played for the Houston Oilers in the mid-1980s. And he was there when Warren Moon left the CFL and Edmonton to join Houston. And Moon took over for Luck. The things we want to discuss with Luck, obviously how Andrew's doing, but also... The XFL, its big first weekend. Can they sustain any momentum off of the pretty good TV numbers, the ratings that they got? And they talked to Colin Kaepernick. They tried to negotiate with Colin Kaepernick to come into the league, but apparently Colin's salary demands were too high. We will discuss all of those topics with Oliver Luck when he joins us next. You weren't a big Attitude Era WWF, WWE fan?
No. Negative.
Okay. This is Vince McMahon, Mr. McMahon's theme song.
I got
song.
That much. Yeah.
Okay.
He, of course, is the money behind the XFL, which had a big first weekend as it is reborn some 19 years after its one and only season in 2001. And we are pleased to welcome the commissioner of the XFL, Oliver Luck, to lead off. Oliver, thank you for this. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great, Scott. Ashley, Mike, nice to be on your show. Thank you for having me.
So let's start with the nuts and bolts of this. How does Oliver Luck and Vincent Kennedy McMahon come together, and how do you take the commissionership of the XFL?
So I've been involved with the business of sports for virtually my entire career. I'm a lawyer by training, and I was working at the NCAA. big believer in college athletics and how important it is to, you know, this country and our system of, you know, sport. And I was aware that Vince had announced that he was relaunching, you know, the XFL 20 years later almost. And I was interested because it's not often that a new football league launches, right? You know, startups are great. You know, we're a very entrepreneurial society, but, you know, true sports startups are relatively few and far between. So the opportunity to, you know, work with a guy like Vince, who's, you know, clearly a very talented man, you know, a great entrepreneur. He's built WWE into a, you know, highly successful publicly traded company. But to, you know, to work with him in terms of building a league from scratch, you know, all those sort of things that you have to do to put a league together, everything from, you know, coaches to equipment to players to training camps to drafts, all of your rules, television partners, that was just an awesome opportunity. And I've been involved with a couple of startups in the past, both with MLS, you know, Major League Soccer. I ran the Houston Dynamo as a startup franchise back in the 2005 to 2010, and then, you know, worked for NFL Europe for a number of years back in the 90s. So I had some experience with startups and know that they're crazy, they're time-consuming, but they're also a lot of fun. So that's really the short story of my involvement with the league. I've been on board now almost 2 years.
And as everything was developing, because you guys have done things quite differently from the NFL, how much of a focus was on wanting the product to be good football that people will latch onto versus wanting it to be a super interactive experience? Because I have to imagine that there are some players that are out of their comfort zone with the immediate sideline interviews or everyone being mic'd up and just the access that the fans get.
Yeah, you laid it out very well. And ultimately, we tried to find the right line where we're providing, you know, something new and fresh, right? More access for the viewer, et cetera, without getting too intrusive in terms of the sphere of a player and a coach. Because, you know, listen, coaches in all sports, I think, are often very traditional, and players are as well. So we spent a lot of time, you know, trying to figure out what the, you know, the right line was, what the right path is. I would compare it to, you know, walking out in your beautiful country in the Canadian Rockies, walking a very high ridge line where you really can't make a false step either way because it might have, you know, serious consequences. So, you know, when we went about hiring coaches, we shared with them right off the bat, hey, you know, you're going to have a camera around you and you're going to be mic'd up and our broadcast partners may listen in to the play call. Mm-hmm. And that's, of course, a little bit frightening for most coaches. But as we, you know, trained the last 3 months, you know, in preparation for all of this, had mock games, you know, Fox and ESPN, ABC, our broadcast partners, they came down with their crews. And, you know, I think we've found a pretty good line where the coaches have adopted to it, the players have adopted to it. But you're right, not every player is comfortable with, you know, a microphone thrust in his face, you know, right after, you know, a play. And a coach, you know, some of the coaches are still a little bit, you know, a little bit nervous, but I think we're all adapting. It's a work in progress. I like to compare it to, you know, changing a tire in a car while the car is moving. You know, sometimes you got to just, you know, roll with the bunches.
With Oliver Luck, he is the commissioner of the XFL. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Wondering, Oliver, if you can peel the curtain back just a little bit into the conversations that you were having with your broadcast partners, ABC, ESPN, and Fox. What is the, or what was the mantra, what was the approach that you folks came up with in terms of access, in terms of differentiating your product, aside from just miking up coaches and whatnot, camera angles, different things? What are some of the things you have done, and what are some of the things we can expect to see as your broadcasts evolve?
Well, a couple of things. So, you know, our rule innovations, you know, the places where we differ from, you know, the National Football League's rule book, those were all discussed with the broadcasters. And that's the same sort of concept, right? Walking that ridge line. We didn't want to be too innovative because then it doesn't look like football that people are accustomed to. I mean, you can do all kind of crazy things, you know, with the game. We talked, for example, at one point about, you know, not allowing any punts at all, like four down football. And, you know, we went back and forth. Is that a good idea? How would that game look? How would coaches coach if you could, you know, not punt, right? A punt's a safety valve, both, you know, in the NFL as well as in the CFL. So that was a bridge too far. We said, no, that probably won't work. Mm-hmm. We talked about, for example, why not change the rules about who's eligible to catch a pass? Why not throw a pass to the left tackle or the right guard?
Just blow it up.
You think about that, and it's kind of interesting, but then you think, oh, yeah, but that's really weird. That would be, you know, probably two bridges too far in terms of you know, coaches coaching. So keep in mind that, you know, when we went out to talk to head coaches, guys like Bob Stoops or Mark Trestman, who's obviously been very successful up in the CFL, mm-hmm. you know, they went, one of their first questions was, is this going to be real football? You know, because they didn't want to get involved with something that, you know, was a little bit too, you know, gimmicky or hokey, or, you know, cheesy perhaps. So, you know, we really wanted to make sure that we made some modifications that we think make sense. We like to say we took a great game, right, the game of professional football, and made it just a little bit better, because the game is incredibly popular, both, you know, here in this country as well as up in Canada. And so we couldn't change it too much, because then all of a sudden it doesn't become football. And listen, our broadcast partners, you know, wouldn't want to sort of take that risk either. They wanted something that was traditional enough that they could, you know, put some of their top guys, you know, Kurt Menefee, their commentators, or, you know, all the other guys that, that, you know, Fox and ABC, ESPN have had, you know. So that was an important part. Again, it was that same sort of concept. Let's push the envelope a bit, but not too far.
There's been a lot of anticipation with Colin Kaepernick making a comeback to pro football. How have those conversations gone with trying to sign him to a contract? And is there any chance of him starting a game this year?
Well, this was reported really well over a year ago. We reached out and had a conversation with his representation. And, you know, the first question, because keep in mind, we're a startup, right? So we've got, you know, very severe restrictions on you know, what we can pay players. And the first question was, you know, what sort of ballpark is Colin looking at? And, you know, it became clear within about, you know, 30 seconds that there wasn't, you know, any common ground in terms of salary expectations. So there was no reason, you know, to pursue that any further, to be very honest with you.
When someone like Colin Kaepernick, who, listen, let's be honest, his situation is not sitting here black and white. There's a lot of nuance that comes along with this, whether you're on his side or whether you believe the NFL has given him a fair shot to come back. There's a lot going on with that. But when someone is approached and their salary expectations from you guys, the XFL, are so massive, it's almost like they know that you might not be able to match it. Do you feel as though he still wants to play professional football, or has he moved on to more of his philanthropic portion of his life, which, listen, is absolutely fine if that's what he wants to do? Because I feel sometimes when I hear these reports that I'm getting a little bit of confusion in terms of the messaging of him actually wanting to show what he can do in a game.
Well, I really don't know, to be honest. As we got started, you know, we had to focus on players who, you know, told us, yes, I'd like to play in the XFL.
Right.
Your salary, standards are acceptable to me. So we ended up, you know, putting about 1,000 guys in our draft pool, and then did a draft in October of last year, and then a supplemental draft in so mid-November of last year to get to our roster numbers when we started our training camps in early December. So we had to focus on the guys who, you know, said to us, yes, I'm in. You know, we didn't really have any, you know, any interest in anybody else who wasn't interested in our league. I mean, there needs to be a mutual sort of interest level, I think.
With Oliver Luck, the commissioner of the XFL, why does it work longer term this time, Oliver? Why does the XFL succeed in its second go around, where it was a one and done 19 years ago in its first?
Sure. Very fair question. I think there are three things that give us a really good chance, and no guarantees, of course, but it gives us a really good shot. One is the fact that we've got Vince and his resources, which have allowed us really over the last 2 years to plan. And that's important, right? That's one thing we saw with the Alliance this past spring. They just, you know, came on too quickly, didn't have a good plan, and as a result, you know, didn't make it through their first season. So the resources that Vince has gives us a shot. Number two, I think, is the quality of our broadcast partnerships with Fox, ABC, and ESPN. That hasn't ever, I don't think, been a sports league, let alone a football league, that's launched with two, you know, of America's, this nation's, of its continents, I guess, biggest media partners. So that power is extraordinary, and that's going to help us. The third thing, I think, is about the quality of football. And so this is my theory. We're at a time where professional football is being played at the best level ever. Right? The athleticism, and I would say this about, you know, big time college football as well in this country. The athleticism, the skill sets, you know, the analytics, the training, the strength and conditioning coaches, the nutrition coaches, the sleep coaches. It's really remarkable how good the game has become. I compare it to my era back in the 70s and 80s, and even with great players like Warren Moon, who I backed up for years in Houston, you know, the game has gotten so much better. As a result, the guys that are available to us, right, and let's be honest, they've had their NFL tryouts. In many cases, some of them have had 3, 4, 5 years in the NFL. They're good football players. Mm-hmm. They're really talented football players. And I think you can play, you know, a good quality, up-tempo game, fast-paced, with those guys. You don't need, and we're not going to get anyway, you know, an Aaron Rodgers or a Pat Mahomes. I mean, that's just out of the question. We don't expect that. And our fans don't expect that. So I think the caliber of player has gotten so good that it allows us to play a fun, exciting, you know, high quality game and attract fans. So that I think is different than maybe 20 years ago. I believe that. So you kind of add all those things together, you know, the capital that Vince is committed to us, you know, the power of our broadcast partners, the level of play that we have. You add, you know, I think a pretty good group of coaches, you know, men that have, you know, established themselves as well-respected coaches around the country. June Jones, also one of your CFL guys and a good friend of mine for years, going back to his time as as a player in the National Football League. I think those guys coach good football. You know, at the end of the day, they know how to coach football and win games. So I think those things that will contribute to us having a really, really good shot at making this work. But again, no guarantees. We have to continue to work hard and promote and build our league from the ground up.
Oliver, we have about 30 seconds, but we do want to ask and kind of check in on how Andrew has done in his first year of retirement. A big adjustment, I'm sure, but kind of what can you tell us about what's happened since he's stepped away from the NFL?
Thank you for asking. He is doing fine. He and his wife had their first baby about 3 months ago, and he's very, very happy and satisfied with retirement and doing well. He's a little bit of a sounding board for me because he obviously is still interested very much in the game of football.
Right.
Noah's probably half the guys in our league. So he'll give me advice when asked, but he's enjoying his retirement. But thank you for asking.
So no chance we're going to see him in the XFL?
I don't think so.
As a pivot for one of these teams the next year or two. Okay.
Oliver, thank you so much for your time this morning. We wish you the very best of luck with the XFL, and you should know, which won't surprise you, we appreciated watching Andrew play. So we wish you well and hope we can catch up again.
Awesome. Have a great day. Thanks for allowing me to come on.
You bet. Thank Oliver you. Luck, the commissioner of the XFL, and yes, also the father of Andrew Luck. Rick Five on the Leafs at 8:30. The Raptors have won 15 in a row. Blake Murphy at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. And the phone lines are open right now at 416-870-0590, 416-870-0590. We'll throw out a trivia question in just a moment for your chance to win tickets to see Canada face the Dominican Republic on Friday, February 21st. This is Canada's FIBA AmeriCup 2021 qualifier game, and it'll also get you into the weekly draw, which we'll make on Friday morning, for a pair of tickets to see the Leafs host the Penguins on February 20th. We throw the trivia question out next. We're taking your texts to 590-590. What was happening in your life the last time the Toronto Maple Leafs won a playoff series? We've got some good answers. We're going to read some of them in the next hour. Blake Murphy and Rick Vive will be our guests in the 8 o'clock hour as well. Time for the contest. We're throwing out a trivia question. This is for your chance to win a pair of tickets to see Canada face the Dominican Republic on Friday, February 21st at Canada's FIBA AmeriCup 2021 qualifier game. This will also get you into the draw, which we will make at about 8 o'clock on Friday morning for a pair of tickets to see the Leafs host Sid and the Penguins on February 20th. Visit sportsnet.ca/590 for details. You will answer this off the air. The first correct caller wins. Name us one XFL franchise, city and nickname. Name us one XFL franchise. We'll announce the winner at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. And that's when Blake Murphy of The Athletic will join us. We're all over the wraps. 15 wins in a row. Can they make it 16 tomorrow night in Brooklyn?
You know, it's not like, you know, you can reach for the panic button if you want to, but it's not unlike we've been in games. You know, we've been with OG at the five before, you know, this year, last year, or whatever. Rondé kind of plays like a five-man a little bit, right, even though he's only 6'5 or 6'6, whatever he is. So he plays in the dunker. He screens. He rolls. Just usually isn't that big a talented center on the nights that you have to do it. So,
Nick Nurse's team is on some kind of run. 15 in a row after pulling away from the Minnesota Timberwolves in the second half last night in that defensive battle. The halftime score was effectively the score of some full-time games in the 80s and early 90s. Like the old...
full-time games?
Yeah, I didn't. If you only knew how little sleep
I don't know
I'm working on.
I was like, I'm going to try words. And help him with that one, but then you just went full-time games, so I was like...
Words.
Words are hard.
Four-quarter games. Oh, that doesn't even... Full games! God, words are eluding me. This is brutal. By the way,
there's like three-point line game scores.
Yes.
There we go.
I like that one.
All right.
Congratulations to Sandra in Maple, who correctly answered our trivia question, which I think I spat out properly in the previous segment. We asked you to name one XFL franchise, and she did, the Houston Roughnecks. I knew of the Dallas Renegades and the St. Louis Battlehawks. So thank you, Sandra, for also teaching me something. The Houston Roughnecks exist. Sandra wins a pair of tickets to see Canada face the Dominican Republic on Friday, February 21st. That's Canada's FIBA AmeriCup 2021 qualifier game, and she is into the draw, which we will make on Friday morning for a pair of Leafs tickets for their February 20th game against the Penguins. Blake Murphy covers the Raptors for The Athletic, and he is with us now. Always great to catch up, Blake. I remember a couple of times, one in 2013 and one in 2014, when I was covering the Blue Jays every day, they had 11-game win streaks in each of those seasons. And baseball, a little different from basketball, they literally do play every day. But being around a team that is on a run like that, you almost get caught up in the vibe when you live it. And you are around that team all of the time. What has the experience been as this winning streak has extended into a realm that I don't think anybody would have predicted?
Yeah, it's interesting because it kind of takes on two lives. Like at first, you know, they're winning some games, and because they were going through so many injuries at that time, you know, it's just everyone's trying to get by it day by day. And even once it's up to six, even seven games, no one's really talking about it. This is a really good team. You'd expect to win six or seven games in a row sometimes. Once it starts at 8-9-10 and the franchise record is kind of in sight, then it almost felt like it was hanging there, right? Like people were aware of the streak, and it was that number 12 that was, you know, that people were reaching for. It was kind of tied into also, you know, the players were really rallying to try to get the coaching staff to the All-Star game. So that was tied into that as well. But since they hit that, it's almost felt like this freeing thing now where, you know, the pressure's not off because the Eastern Conference standings are still pretty tight, and they still need that cushion in the two seed. But the streak itself has become this kind of freeing thing where, you know, there's almost that sense in the room, I think, that not a lot can go wrong right now. And no matter what you can throw at them, they're going to be able to deal with it, including, you know, playing against Karl-Anthony Towns with no center. So I think they're in a really, really good spot now mentally. And it's kind of rode those waves as the streak became a stress. And now it's become this big freeing thing.
Karl-Anthony Towns is like pretty trash, eh? Would that be your assessment from last game? No, I'm just joking.
Those would not be the words I chose. No.
Okay. So what I was talking about earlier was that he's a very good player, but obviously this franchise hasn't done anything since he's been drafted. I would say it's similar to kind of having Anthony Davis on the Pelicans, where it's like you haven't been able to really drag them out of mediocrity. And I thought that it was a good opportunity for him last night to kind of go off against this Raptors team. And then you can't even post up Fred VanVleet, for example. And I think for those who don't necessarily watch a lot of Timberwolves games, it could have been a bit of a rude awakening if you thought that he was in this upper tier of superstardom.
It's tough because, you know, I think what Towns gets, you know, there are nights where it's absolutely, you can hang it on Towns. And, you know, last night, the offense is one thing, and then you look at the defensive end and it's like, oh yeah, I definitely see where you can put the blame on Towns. You know, last night, a couple new guys on the team, his first game with D'Angelo Russell. Mm-hmm. I get it to an extent. I think sometimes he runs into that balance. And we talked about this with DeRozan when he was coming up and Kawhi Leonard in the clutch last year. You know, there's a difference between making the right play and making what the right play is for a superstar, or what people feel like the right play is for a superstar. So when he is backing down Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and that Pascal Siakam double comes in the middle of the floor, a lot of people want Towns to try to pull his way through that and score at the rim because he does have the size advantage and he is so talented offensively. You know, I think for him, he sees that as an opportunity to kick it out to a teammate and get those guys involved, especially with D'Angelo Russell there now. And I think, you know, he's got a lot of reps under his belt, so he should maybe have it more figured out than he does. But I think he's still trying to figure out that right balance between asserting himself as a scorer and trying to be the fulcrum of the offense. And you've seen these last two games since they made that trade. He's a lot more active as a passer. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, non-verbally trying to get guys to make cuts. He's picking guys off backdoor and stuff. But yeah, I would have expected him to eat a lot more against guys like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and Fred VanVleet and Chris Boucher on him in the post, for sure.
With Blake Murphy of The Athletic, and just to pick up on your point, Ashley's, Blake, it is a reminder that in professional sports, nothing is guaranteed, right? I mean, just last week, the Timberwolves moved on from Andrew Wiggins. Karl-Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins were not able to turn that T-Wolves franchise into a winner. Jimmy Butler was there for a little bit of time as well. And yet here with the Raptors, who have not had really any high draft picks in the last number of years because of the success of the franchise, Pascal Siakam, a lot of the not even necessarily drafted guys, the undrafted but developed guys like Fred VanVleet, there are no guaranteed ways to succeed. And sometimes, as in the Raptors' case, you succeed in more unexpected ways.
For sure. It's kind of ironic that the one guy out of the Raptors rotation most of this year is the one guy who was a lottery pick in Stanley Johnson. there are a lot of ways to do this stuff. And, you know, Russell and Towns, those guys were high picks because they're immensely talented. And obviously they're immensely talented on the offensive end. There's a lot that Minnesota can do with that and can build around that. But, you know, there are also cultural elements. You know, I was in the Timberwolves locker room last night and they're one of the few teams that travels with a bunch of, you know, branded team gear. And that seems like a silly thing, but they've got these words of affirmation, these culture buzzwords on all of these like carpets in the locker room and stuff like that. And so they're very much a franchise in the process of trying to figure those things out and how do they build and develop winners, where you look at a team like the Raptors now in year 7 or 8 of that, and they're the model that other teams are coming for. You know, the Miami Heat talked openly about it when the Raptors visited them early in the year, how they looked at the Raptors' ability to turn G League guys into NBA guys and fringe NBA guys into NBA rotation guys. And teams are trying to figure out what it is the Raptors are doing. You know, they still seem to be ahead of it. You get a guy like Terrence Davis coming in this year undrafted. Even a guy like Matt Thomas, who they bring in from overseas and other teams maybe see his limitations. And the Raptors look at guys like that and kind of don't ask what they can't do. They ask what they can do. Right. And Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, no, he can't provide a lot of spacing, but he's everywhere on defense. But you can get away with playing him as a center on offense because of what his skill set is there. So I think it's that kind of open-mindedness and growth mentality that's kind of defined the Raptors' ability to, you know, find undervalued guys and develop them and find NBA roles for them.
Toronto's moved within 3 wins of the Bucks streak this year of 18. There's a lot of conversation on how this team does stack up against other top teams from the East. What else can this Raptors team do till people start, I don't want to say taking them serious if they got to go up against the Bucks in a series or in the playoffs, but what else can they do to kind of, persuade people to say, you know what, now, you know what, we can take down the Bucks?
Yeah, it's tough. I've had a couple people say to me on Twitter or even in person, you know, well, the Raptors have won 15 straight, but they haven't done it against very good competition. Well, those are the 15 teams they've played. You can only do so much. And I do think they have some quality wins in there. The win at Oklahoma City, beating Philly even without Embiid, the two Indiana wins. So I think, you know, the longer this goes on, obviously people take notice. But they have some big games coming up out of the All-Star break as well. They'll see Indiana a third time. And even though Indiana's struggling, it's always difficult to beat a really good team three times in a row. And then there's obviously that Bucks showdown coming. So the schedule does have, you know, it's not unfriendly the rest of the way. The Raptors have a league average strength of schedule, but there are going to be some of these extra games against that 1-6 in the East that people are kind of measuring them by. You know, the Raptors struggles in those matchups so far. I think there's something like 4-7 against that group. You know, they're kind of defined by how many guys the Raptors have been missing and how injured they've been, but now you have a 15 game win streak. So you kind of lose that as a qualifier. So I'd say, you know, the longer the win streak goes, the better. But coming out of the All-Star break, when they're going to have Indy again and they're going to have Milwaukee again, and then down the stretch, they're going to have a couple more tests. Those will be the big games that people are keying in on. And you won't extrapolate too much from one game. But, yeah, the game on the 25th against the Bucks projects as a pretty big, you know, they say measuring stick game. And I don't think they'll overreact to that one performance. But I think people are going to be really curious to see how that matches up.
Despite the fact that this team has suffered through so many injuries, despite the fact that they lost Kawhi Leonard in the offseason, Blake, do you think it's fair to say that this season has been more enjoyable than last? And by what I mean by that is I felt like last year there were so many expectations on this group just because Masai and Bobby pulled the trigger on the DeMar DeRozan Kawhi Leonard trade. And so it was like, well, it's championship or bust. And that added a sense of pressure and expectation, whereas this year I feel like expectations were definitely a little bit lower and they've just been able to kind of enjoy playing the game without all these looming questions hanging over them.
Yeah, I think that's fair for sure. Last year, you know, every time they lose two games in a row or Kawhi Leonard misses three games, you know, it seems like the end of the world because everyone's operating under the understanding that was probably a one-year window. And then this year, you know, you said they have lower expectations, and that kind of makes this all feel like almost like house money. Mm-hmm. And then there's also that element of, you know, I thought heading into the year that not to this extent, obviously, but I thought there might be this element of the Raptors have this championship hangover. They get all the benefit of the championship experience and keeping seven rotation guys together. But then they also get to slide back into this kind of prove them role that they've thrived with so much. Like the Raptors love the whiteboard material of being low in the power rankings and being slept on and things like that. So I think, you know, I think the fan base does better like that than they do being a favorite too. So, you know, all those factors kind of pull the same way. And to do this all through injuries, people should be excited. And you know, my colleague Eric Kareen at The Athletic wrote about it last night that there are, over the course of 82 games, there's a lot of stuff to worry about, and you have to kind of keep the big picture in mind. But you don't get things like a 15-game winning streak through a bunch of injuries with a really fun and kind of likable group of guys very often. So people should lean in and enjoy this. Last year was very special for what it was, but you're right. There was that sort of specter of urgency over everything, and this year's a little more free and I think a little more fun.
With Blake Murphy, Nick Nurse, what, you go back a decade, he's coaching in Europe, he's coaching in England. He's hoping to land on an NBA bench at some point in his life. And now in the last, 16, 17 months, he's hired as the Raptors head coach. He wins an NBA title, and he is now presiding over one of the top three teams in the NBA in his second season by record. What have you appreciated most about him, Blake, in being so close to the team and observing him and dealing with him over the last year and a half?
Yeah, I think, you know, the biggest thing for me is that he's kind of been who he said he was going to be. And that's when you get the job and DeMar DeRozan's been traded away and Dwayne Casey's been let go and the franchise kind of has all this pressure on it. It's one thing to come out and say, oh, yeah, we're going to try a bunch of stuff. We're going to play freely. And then it's another when you get in a locker room with Kawhi Leonard and Kyle Lowry and later Marc Gasol, and you're actually trying to get those guys to buy in. And Nurse kind of made a comment pregame last night about how last year he had to slow play bringing the defense along to try to get the to kind of reestablish the principles and get the team playing their more basic man-to-man defense the way he wanted. And that caused some frustrations, and guys pushed back on that a little bit. But over the long haul, he got that buy-in. And I think it's the same thing with how he rotated the starters last year and how, you know, guys' roles changed over the course of the year. Jonas Valanciunas moving to the bench, and then Serge Ibaka moving to the bench. Norman Powell kind of bouncing around roles as he does. And that's carried over into this year. And I think, you know, I think that defines a lot about who Nurse is as a coach, because where he did come from, his time in the G League and things like that. But I also think that that open-mindedness and that flexibility is just a really good attitude to instill on your team. You know, I don't, if you're a young developing team, maybe that role certainty is important. And that sense of rigidity kind of helps guys grow within a definition. But with a team like this, when you're as talented and as smart as the Raptors are, I've really appreciated that Nurse has kind of stuck with this agile approach to coaching, where he can throw Rondae Hollis-Jefferson at center, or he can zone a team up for a whole quarter or full court trap for a quarter to try to make a comeback. And, you know, he doesn't worry about things like, oh, Steph Curry's going to call my defense janky, or it's going to look really ugly for a quarter. So I've appreciated that openness and him kind of sticking to what he said he was going to be.
Thank you for this, Blake. It's a heck of a run for the Raps, and it'll be a fun as we head down the stretch, get set for the playoffs. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you.
See ya.
Blake Murphy of The Athletic. So it's the Leafs and Coyotes tonight. The Raps will go for 16 straight in Brooklyn tomorrow. Leafs and Coyotes down at Scotiabank Arena tonight. Frederik Andersen may be back in the lineup. We're just kind of randomly shooting the breeze last hour, which is sort of what we do here sometimes. And we just said, hey, what were you doing? Where were you in your life the last time the Leafs won a playoff series, which, of course, was April of 2004, a Toronto Maple Leafs team that featured Brian Leetch.
Yep.
Brian Leetch. Like, you were saying, Ziggy, off the air, too, like, you remember Ron Francis played for the Maple Leafs? And I said, well, what about Callie Johansson? Like, all of these guys who played, like, a handful of games for the Leafs, Pat Quinn would go and get all the veterans and see if he couldn't stock them up. What were you doing? So we invited your texts to 590-590. A lot happens in 16 years, Ashley. A lot happens in 16 years.
Yeah, what were you doing, or what has changed, has been the responses that we've been getting. So a few really, really good ones. So Dave from Waterdown says, the last time the Leafs won a playoff round, I was married with children. Correction. The last time the Leafs won a playoff round, I was dating my ex-wife. So Dave has gone from dating to married to divorcee to status unknown. But again, a lot has happened in 14 years. So, 16 years.
16 years. 2004 actually, yeah. To 2020.
Okay. Andrew and Aurelia says, the last time the Leafs won a playoff series, I was in grade 9 going to my first OFSA championship event for cross-country skiing. Cross-country skiing, of course, the ladies love cross-country skiers also. That's one of the premier events. So thanks for writing it, Andrew. And then there was one more that I wanted to point out. Where's he at?
If you were 14 years old, so he is now 30 years old, his grade 9 cross-country skiing at OFSA.
Yeah.
And now a 30-year-old.
Okay.
It's so sad. The Raps have won 15 in a row, and now we're making everything miserable here.
Okay, Corey, this is the last one. This is what I'm going to end with. Corey said, the last time the Leafs won a playoff series, I hit puberty. Basically, that Ronit Golan OT was both a shot of hormones and a shot to the heart. So poetic, really, from Corey. Thank you for that, sir.
The overtime, 2-on-1.
The Ronit Golan,
yeah.
Oh, I remember.
I was there.
I remember it like it was yesterday. You were there in the crowd.
Yeah, I was there
who
watching
were you playing
it.
For? You were playing for Carolina.
Carolina. But I'd go to games when I'd come home.
Sure,
right?
Of course.
Yeah, yeah. I was always interested in, you know, you grow up watching the Leafs. Every time I'd come home, you always watch a couple playoff games if they're
there. Tell
in
me.
It.
Tell me you were there. Current active NHL player, team out of the playoffs, and you were sitting there in the crowd with
in
your Aki Berg jersey on. Rooting for your hometown team.
No jersey.
No Please jersey. Tell me. I only have a Gary Lehman jersey when I was a kid at home. That's
oh, can you
it.
Bring that in?
If
you
I
gotta
can,
bring that in.
I gotta find it, but yeah, it's buried in a box somewhere in a basement.
Wow, put some respect on Lehman. That's crazy.
Gary Lehman jersey.
We gotta get him on.
and you got to wear the jersey while he's in. We got to get him into studio, and you got to wear the jersey.
It's a 7-year-old's jersey.
Oh, it's a kid's jersey. Oh, okay.
Let me see if Hayden will fit into it.
It'll be too big for him.
Oh.
Sorry, Hayden.
Just taking shots at guys behind the glass who can't put a microphone in front of their face. I mean, he's here to defend himself, but he can't really defend himself.
Sorry, buddy.
Arizona in town tonight, and Rick Vive, former Leaf great. Speaking of Gary Lehman, another 50-goal scorer in his time with the Leafs, Rick Vive will be along here in just a minute. Frederik Andersen coming back potentially is the big story. And even if he doesn't play tonight because something changes, we know he's close. That's
crucial. It's not too bad. Well, we were worried it was going to be concussion-related, right?
Right.
And then you never know how bad those can be, right? Where he's missing a ton of time. And, you know, this is just a regular neck injury. It's not whiplash, though, right?
No, but Freddie always has.
There's no such thing as a regular neck injury, okay? Every neck injury is severe. I know you were, and I'm defending all of us who are going through neck trauma right now. Myself, Freddie, and Kyle included. I will advocate for neck injury survivors.
Where was Freddie's neck brace? That's what I wanted him to have, the same one that Larry had. You know, when you were in those ones with the soft one, it's like you're not injured.
Well, also you're going into court for a civil suit. That's what that one is. It's like, oh, my. It's like the sheriff from Golden State.
Yes.
That's what that is.
Oh, yeah.
The sheriff from Golden State neck brace.
And I love the fact that guys were giving him a hard time on the plane.
He took
for
it
Larry.
Right off. He's like, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Oh, you have to. Like, what's he thinking? Come on.
He's thinking about longevity and safety.
Okay.
Okay.
Maybe it's a new fashion statement. I mean, Rip Hamilton broke his nose once and never took the plastic shield off. Maybe the next thing is the neck brace as a style point.
He could have just got a Bacchus scarf. I think he would have been in better shape.
That's his version of fashion and art, is that the scarf is actually the brace. The brace is the scarf.
I love that. Did you see that post? We should always credit who posts it, but I think Mike Gentile sent it into our WhatsApp feed. The Serge's scarf with all the opponents the Raptors have beaten on the 15-game win streak.
People have memed the heck out of Serge's scarf. They've done it so far where they've just blown up the scarf as the full screen, and then just a small Serge head has been photoshopped in one of the crocheted loops. Yeah, it's good stuff. This team is feel good all around, honestly. Everything about them.
Rick Vive, former Leafs captain, former 50-goal scorer for the Maple Leafs, joins us next. We tee up the Leafs and the Coyotes. I'll say it until the season's over. Big 2 points on the line. We discuss next.
It's feeling good. I think obviously the first practice back with the team today was pretty positive. So been a good process so far. Taking the right steps in the right time fashion, and again, like day to day right now. But we'll see.
That is Frederik Andersen. He could be back for the Maple Leafs tonight. They've got Arizona and Philip. You wanted me to mention Philip, Ziggy. Phil Kessel's in town tonight with the Arizona Coyotes.
Phil Kessel back in town. What's he been doing with the Coyotes this year? He's at 12 goals, 21 assists, 33 points in 58 games, minus 23. He's probably up there for the green jacket. The green jackets was given to you.
The Masters under par. Minus 23. I got it. I just was waiting for you to get hate on Twitter for
I'll get chirp for this one.
For mentioning plus minus. You know, we're not allowed to do that.
There's no plus minus anymore?
No, it doesn't exist.
Hey, I got heckled for my plus minus and evaluated. I'm going to keep it going until it's actually gone.
Or until you're over it.
Until it's actually gone.
You don't sound like you're over it.
Okay.
This is Leadoff. Leafs again hosting Arizona tonight. Rick Vive is a former Maple Leafs captain, former 50-goal scorer with the Maple Leafs. And Rick, we're putting you on the spot because we have been talking about this over the course of the show and inviting texts to our text line at 590-590. Just randomly came up. What were you doing? Where were you at in your life the last time the Maple Leafs won a playoff series in 2004? What were you up to?
It's a good... I think I was just getting ready to move down to Niagara Falls.
Okay. All right. That's a Very deep answer.
It's
moving
a big move.
from Oakville to Niagara Falls. Okay. Yeah, there you go.
Well, I was in the midst of it.
Yeah.
That was 6 years ago.
Well, 16.
2004.
Yes. 2004, Rick, it's been a generation since we've won a playoff series. It's killing me.
Oh, you know what? My mind just went kind of blank there. So 2004, I was doing Leafs TV, actually.
Okay. There you go. That's a long time ago. Hopefully they exorcise that demon. Freddie Anderson, the obvious question would be what he means to this team. But they've got to get him back. Rick, Jack Campbell fills a role on this team that I think we'd gotten to a point in acknowledging Michael Hutchinson could not. What happens to a bench? What happens to a locker room when a team has doubt in one or both of its goaltenders?
Well, I think a lot of things. I mean, there is a bit of doubt in your mind when that goaltender is, you know, starting a game, and I think you go out. I mean, you're hoping and you're saying to yourself, okay, let's play good in front of him and give him some help so that, you know, he can be successful. But there's times where you have a goalie that you just, I guess there's a lack of trust. You don't believe that you can get the job done, and it makes it a little bit harder because you're trying to close things down. You're trying to play as well defensively as you can. And sometimes that's just not good for a team to play that way. You got to be a little bit more aggressive and, you know, hopefully get the guy two or three or four goals and hope that he can, you know, keep all but two or three out of the net.
And when you're playing against the team, Rick, I mean, when I was playing against a backup goaltender, you'd try to throw more pucks to the net, get more bodies to the crease, maybe give him the extra bump. Do you kind of see teams that the Leafs play against change their systems or maybe come into a game a little bit differently than they would if Anderson was playing?
Well, I think so. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, you try to get as many pucks to the net as possible. Well, in our day, you ran the goalie over. And not much today, but... Oh, yeah, there was a lot of things that went on. And, I mean, you try to disturb him as much as possible, going through the crease, giving him a little poke in the pad, stuff like that, and, you know, hope that you can throw him off. I mean, I think we did that back then with every goalie. It didn't matter if it was the number one guy, the starter, or the backup. That was what you did. You tried to distract the goaltender.
Now, with that trade with Campbell, brought Clifford to the team, do you believe that addressed the, I guess I want to say toughness, but, you know, just give the Leafs a different look? You know, Kyle Dubas has built this team on skill and speed, and all of a sudden Clifford comes in. Do you see that him changing his ways and this team kind of maybe hopefully playing a little bit of a tougher style?
Well, I think it's necessary, Mike, I really do. I think that's something that, and you see it in playoff hockey. It's not so much in the regular season, but once playoffs roll around, you need a little bit more grit, a little bit more determination. And, you know, it's not just Kyle Clifford. It's the entire team. If they're going to win a playoff series, they're going to have to play a little harder. I mean, and especially the game in Montreal, you get outshot 17-1 in the third period. I mean, there's got to be some kind of a pushback and say, hey, we're not going anywhere. We're here to win this game. And if that means getting in and, you know, throwing a few more hits or stopping a cycle in your own end by pinning a player and, you know, getting the puck out. But there's got to be a lot more intensity and I think physical play to get guys off the puck, because that's what happens in the playoffs.
Rick Five is our guest, former Leafs captain and former three-time 50-goal scorer with the Maple Leafs. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Not a bad resume. Not a bad resume there. I'm glad that you brought up the Montreal Canadiens Toronto Maple Leafs game, because we were talking a lot yesterday about the fact that Toronto kind of hunkered down in their own end and went into defensive mode as opposed to playing to their strengths, keeping pressure on. You mentioned the shot differential, keeping the pressure on without taking too many risks in order to keep that lead. Rick, in your experience, what are a few things that a team should always do when they're playing with the lead in order to protect it?
I think it's just managing the puck a little bit better, not just dumping it out and allowing that them to get it and then, you know, fire it back in and then come back in on the forecheck. I mean, it's just different ways. You got to play harder in your own zone so you can recover the puck, and then you got to manage it a little bit better. I mean, just dumping it out and allowing the other team to regroup and come back at you is really not the way to do it. So you know what, defense is just hard work. It's not rocket science when you're playing defense. It's you play hard in your own zone. You make sure you're between your man and the net. I mean, just simple little things, but it's hard work, mm-hmm. and that's all it is. It's just a little bit harder work to play defense. And like I say, when you get outshot 17-1 in a period, I would have to say the work ethic probably wasn't up to par.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair assessment. What do you think of the work ethic of the young kids that we've seen a lot more of recently in Sandin and Liljegren?
Well, I mean, it's good. They're guys that are obviously going to play in the National Hockey League and probably play for a while, but especially Sandin, he's got great vision, and he actually shown that he can take a hit and bounce off and make plays as well. So mm-hmm. I think that's important. You get guys like that can play that way in the playoffs when you're getting bumped continually. I think that'll help them going forward when you have guys that can do that and still make a play.
But in my estimation, it's a little bit problematic if this team is going to rely on those two young guys to be kind of their stalwarts going into a postseason run, right? Like, Riley's going to come back. Obviously, that's going to make a difference. But we were talking to Chris Johnson yesterday about the fact that it's been Sandin that's really shined since Riley's been out. And for me, it was a little bit disappointing that it hadn't been another one of the players that has more experience than these young kids that's really stepped up.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, these young kids are probably not the guys that are maybe going to get it done right now. They're guys probably in a year or two that are going to be a lot better defensemen. But yeah, I think you look at their defense as a whole, and I'm not looking at just the defensemen. I'm looking at the forwards as well. And I was in Montreal at the game and watched, and it was like, you know, the forwards, you need to come back and you need to play better in your own zone, better coverage, better puck retrieval. And you got to be available for the defense when they get it. And I think all of it was missing in the third period in Montreal.
Rick, thank you for your time this morning. We'll catch up again soon, and we won't ask you to take us back two decades into your life.
I barely remember two decades
ago. I don't remember 2 minutes ago, let alone two decades ago.
Yeah, up next, 1993. So just be prepared.
Thanks, Rick.
Oh, boy. Okay, thanks, guys.
Always
thanks.
Fun.
See ya.
You could see our Toronto winter sports teams back-to-back with our VTech Wake Up Call contest. All you got to do is call 416-413-4141 and tell us what you really think. Give us your hottest Toronto sports take. The phone number again, 416-413-4141. It's an answering machine. Just leave the message. The grand prize includes tickets, hotel accommodations, and more. Leave us your best sports take, and then tune in every Friday to hear if yours was chosen. If we play it back, that's your cue to call for the wake-up call. Again, the number is 416-413-4141. Call anytime or visit sportsnet.ca/590 for details. Text us to 590-590. We are taking your submissions. What was going on in your life? The good, the bad, the ugly. The last time the Maple Leafs won a playoff series, 16 years ago. We've had people say, I was dating my ex-wife, which means they got engaged, got married, and have since gotten divorced. A lot changes in 16 years. We'll read more of your texts next. So as the Raptors go for 16 consecutive victories tomorrow night in Brooklyn. The Leafs are hosting Arizona tonight. We are taking your texts about what was going on in your life and what has changed since 16 years ago when the Leafs last won a playoff series. This was not a planned topic. It just kind of randomly came up at about 7 o'clock. The responses, though, have made this discussion well worth it.
The responses have been really good. So here are a couple more that we've gotten. First one's from Paul. He said, I was finishing up my practice marriage. Yikes. Remarried 12 years since now.
More of an expert these days, eh?
Yeah. Also, congrats on getting two people to marry you. That's no small feat also. Chris from Burlington says he finished middle school, high school, his undergrad, and law school. What a life. And also congratulations on your success, Chris. So I think that was kind of just bragging a little bit, but whatever. And then Jeff from Tottenham said, Rick Vive signed my jersey at a Dale Hawerchuk hockey tournament in Hockley Valley. Thanks, buddy. To Rick, not us.
Oh, okay. Yeah. 16 years ago he signed the jersey?
Yeah. And then someone wrote in, girls still had cooties. From Chris.
Oh my gosh.
From Chris in Cambridge. In 2004, girls still had cooties.
Cooties is such a word, eh? Like,
yeah, that'll take you back.
That stops at about 11 years old. 10, 9?
16.
16! Mike Tigamanis takes us back to his Kingston days.
Yeah, still now for some of us.
Don't let me sit here.
And oh, I'm just, letting you
stew. You love it. I want to hear a Kingston story.
Kingston, good old days.
We got to hear Kingston stories. We got to hear.
We don't have enough time.
We got to hear Stages stories.
Yeah, we'll do some stages and some Grizzly stories.
Oh,
I think we all have a Stages story.
Yeah, we've all been to Stages. And none of, like, Which I have hardly.
I don't even know what that says about us that we've all been there. And we're not, I had no reason to be in Kingston except for like a quick tournament stop over on a weekend.
No, except to go to Stages.
No, that's not that a destination.
The tournament was the.
The excuse?
We went to Stages and a tournament broke out. It's not that a tournament was there and we just ended up at Stages. It was vice versa. All right, Leafs and Coyotes tonight. Frederik Andersen. We are hoping will return, but at least if he's another 48 or so hours away, Jack Campbell would, of course, play for the Maple Leafs tonight. Sheldon Keefe screwed me up. I was listening to some of the clips from yesterday's post-practice, and he was calling Jack Campbell Soupy.
You thought it was McKayev.
I was like, well, you know, if we could have Freddie back, we could have Soupy, but Soupy's there to cover us. I'm like, the hell's going on? You're talking about McKayev? McKayev's not coming back for a while.
Well,
Campbell's skating with Barb, though.
Yes. Well, except he can skate with the...
Well, I mean, he's getting his cardio up.
Yeah.
Well, they got to still be careful, right? Like, that's an artery or whatever.
Very
like,
serious.
I think even get his blood pressure up and your heart rate, you got to be kind of cautious. But, yeah, this is, you know, one of those tests to see if he does keep playing any more games this string, this whole week. It's going to be interesting. When Andersen comes back, how many games are they both going to get, right? Because say he plays well and Andersen comes back and plays just so-so, you have to run with the hot hand right now.
You got to run with the hot hand. And in that case, what's the big deal? Because if you get to the playoffs and Freddie's got less of a workload.
That's the best case scenario. I love having two goaltenders that you can go to.
Yeah, if Jack Campbell gets on a heater, let him run for two or three games.
And Nylander is back in the lineup tonight.
William Nylander is back from illness. We will be back at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. Have a wonderful Tuesday. Stay tuned for Good Show.